Welcome to Overdrive on TSN 1050 and on TSN 4. Mark Rowe in for Brian Hayes alongside, I think, a very happy Gord Miller with that intro.
Up the Stones, man. They're back on the road. They're back playing shows.
That's good to hear. Good to hear.
Well, maybe it would have been better if they'd retired a little
sooner. Oh, you're afraid of the legacy.
Well, their legacy is, I mean, their legacy is insured because it's music. It lives forever.
Right. But you just don't want them to go out like Willie Mays.
Yeah. I and my daughter reminds me of this all the time. I once made a very foolish decision in the fall of 1981, I think it was. The Stones were touring the Tattoo U tour, and that was going to be their last tour, according to Rolling Stone magazine, which they would know.
Yeah.
So we all piled into my buddy Mark's Datsun B210 to drive from Edmonton to Boulder, Colorado, where his brother was going to school, and go see the concert. And in so doing, blew off some exams. It wasn't the last tour. I've seen them a lot since. We had the absolute worst seats in the house. The worst.
So did they play in like the football stadium?
They did.
Okay, so and it's a big stadium.
And you could literally not be further from the stage and still be in the stadium than we were. So that was a poorly executed, poorly thought out decision on my part.
You have a story to tell, though.
Well, it's not the problem is every time I tell my daughter to, you know, bear down at school,
yeah,
she reminds me of that fact.
Yeah, you brushed off an exam to go see.
Oh, not one.
Okay.
No. several.
Okay, several. To go see the final concert.
The final tour.
Or the final tour.
So.
How many final tours do bands have?
Like, oh, it's ridiculous.
Right?
So, I mean, The Who's retired like 15 times. So,
right.
But I do love the Stones, and so it was nice to hear that. Yeah.
Man, it's funny. I thought we were going to be hard hit with content today. There's nothing really to talk about. I'm glad.
It's unbelievable. I mean,
it's crazy.
This week has been unbelievable.
Yeah. Yeah, well, when you have two drafts in the same week, it helps.
Yeah.
The NHL draft starts tomorrow, goes into Saturday.
Yeah.
Yesterday was the expansion draft where the Seattle Kraken were like Fort Knox for like weeks, months, and then the dam broke. And we found out about everything.
Literally, I think everyone but Detroit's pick leaked, right?
Yeah. It was, anyways, I guess that's what you get when you have to get your picks in at 10 a.m. and the show is at 8 p.m. But, you know, and we'll get to that, and we'll get to the Toronto story, and Kyle Dubas is going to join us at 5:05. The big story regarding the Maple Leafs right now has been one of the big stories for the last week, and it's been Zach Hyman. And, you know, a couple hours ago, I thought this would be official by now, and maybe it's official by the end of the show. Zach Hyman signing with the Edmonton Oilers. And we've heard 7 years. We've heard signing with the Leafs on an 8-year deal and then trading Hyman and that contract to the Oilers and obviously getting something back. But, you know, the Oilers are all in on Zach Hyman. And to me, it's a gamble.
They reportedly met last night in Edmonton, Hyman and Oilers GM Ken Holland. And so the trick here is the math.
Right.
So, and I'm sorry, there's going to be a little bit of math here. Not too much, but some math.
It's the season of math, right?
So the Oilers can't sign him now. They can agree to terms, but the contract can't be officially signed until noon Eastern time on the 28th.
Right.
They can discuss the parameters of a contract. So I think the issue is going to be, we can talk to Kyle Dubas about this in an hour. I think anything north of an average annual value, AAV, of $4.5 million puts the Leafs in a tough spot. So let's just say, for the sake of argument, Edmonton can only offer him a maximum 7-year deal. That's all they can give him.
Mm-hmm.
The Leafs are the only team that can give him 8.
Seattle, too.
No, not anymore. After yesterday, they can't.
Oh, okay.
After yesterday, they can't.
Right, okay.
So let's just say, for sake of argument, the Oilers give him 7 years times $5.5 million. Mm-hmm. That's $38.5 million, okay? So take that $38.5 million, now divide it by 8.
Mm-hmm.
You're at about $4.8 million. That's got to be close to the outer reaches of what the Leafs can do. That's probably beyond what they can do.
Yeah.
But it's getting to the outer reaches of what they can do. So I think with contracts, you get into the sort of AAV and what it is. but there's also the totality of the contract. What's it? So, for example, Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, mm-hmm. right, signed an 8-year deal with Edmonton for $5 million a year. But it's $40 million. He's going to get $40 million over the course right. of the contract. So I guess the question, how I think it'll play out, I think the Oilers have made their pitch to Hyman. I think he takes it back to the Leafs and sees what they can do. And I believe in my heart, I mean, I haven't talked to Zach Hyman about it specifically. He loves it here. He's from here. Mm-hmm. He wants to get paid. This is a once-in-a-lifetime yeah. opportunity. Like this is literally a once-in-a-lifetime
yeah, absolutely.
Opportunity. Right?
He loves Toronto, but will sign the best deal for him, as he should. Right? Like, there's 100%. No hometown discount.
Well, there can be. And I think that there are examples over the past of, and the one I always go back to is Martin LaPointe. You know, he was a Detroit draft pick, played really well for them, had a breakout goal-scoring year in his unrestricted free agent year, signed a big contract with Boston. Now, there was no salary cap back then, but Detroit, you know, there was a budget.
For sure.
So he didn't re-sign. Detroit went and won the Cup without him the next year. He didn't like Boston. And it didn't work out for him. There is something to be said for when they like you and you like them. Mm-hmm. You know, they know you and you know them. But at the end of the day, if the Leafs can at least come close, and I think 4.8, that's a tough pill to swallow.
But I don't even know if it's the right move at all for the Leafs. Like, forget the salary cap. He's 29, plays a physical brand of hockey, which they need.
Right.
But he has been hurt.
Well, but I mean, I hate to say this, an 8-year deal, chances are that's somebody else's problem. But even if it's not,
yeah,
you'll front end load it. So the back end of it doesn't have a lot of cash. And what are the odds he finishes it? I mean,
not great.
You hate to say it, but who finishes these 8-year deals? Ovechkin just finished a 12-year deal. But
yeah.
I mean, who realistically signs an 8-year deal approaching 30?
Wow.
And it's going to, I mean, the chances of, I mean, Shea Weber's going to wind up on long-term injury reserve for Montreal.
Yeah. Unfortunately, Mark Bergevin came out today and said he's not playing next season and probably never going to play again.
Which is awful. But, I mean, you hate to sound that insensitive about it, but the fact of the matter is, Mark,
in 2012, when Zach Parise and Ryan Suter signed those deals with the Wild, we weren't talking about, yeah, they'll probably buy them out by the end of this, right? But yeah. It happened.
So, I mean, I just think it's more likely that they, I mean, you know, had Minnesota not bought him out, the odds of Zach Parise finishing that contract weren't great. He's already had back surgery a couple of years ago. Like, I mean, mm-hmm. you know, so, but I do think, you know, for the Leafs, the calculus is a tough one. They have about, right now, they have $9.5 million in cap space. They've got 17 players signed. Oh, make it 18, put Nick Robertson in that mix. Mm-hmm. So they need probably 3 forwards, a defenseman, and most importantly, a goaltender.
Right. And a goalie who you can call him a backup, you can call him 1B to Jack Campbell because, you know, Jack Campbell was a great story last year, played really well, not the reason why they lost that series, but is he a guy that can start 65-plus games in a season?
He's never started more than 26 in a season, so it's a leap, but, I mean, if that's part of your calculus, then you have to go with it because sooner or later, in this cap system, you're going to have holes. Everyone does.
Yeah.
And even Tampa had some holes, but not many, mind you. but
did you see their list that the Kraken had could choose from?
Yeah. So take that 9 point. Now this is assuming they don't do something else, another trade. But mm-hmm. you know, Kyle Dubas said this morning he's committed to the core four. And that's half your cap there. So let's say they're in about $9.5 million in cap space. Well, you know, Hyman or a substitute is going to be probably around four of that. Mm-hmm. So, right. I mean, it starts to disappear in a hurry. So I wonder what the mechanics of this will be. And we're going to find out really quickly here over the next couple of days. You know, if you're going to make trades for name players with contracts, the draft is the time to do it.
Yeah. Darren Dreger, who's going to join us later in the show, reported earlier today a lot of talk about the Oilers and what they're going to pay for Hyman. He believes 7 years is the target and could climb as high as $5.5 million
year. That's the 38.5. That's the 37.5. Sorry, yes. 37.5, not 38.
So there's obviously there can be discussions with Toronto with whether or not Toronto signs him to an 8-year deal and trades those, you know, trades Hyman in that.
So if the Oilers give him, say the Oilers give him 7 times 3.5, right?
Is this the first time on Overdrive history that we've brought a calculator out?
$38.5 million. So $38.5 million. I mean, that likely puts that's about 4.8
right
for the Leafs to, on an 8-year deal. That's so.
We are very close to having the "so what do the Maple Leafs do now" conversation with Zach Hyman leaving. And we've already kind of been there. I think a lot of fans mentally have been there for a bit when you look at the numbers. You know, it's the same rhetoric around this team, whether you buy into it or not, that they're too soft. They're too easy. There's too much of the same thing. They're too talented in a way, which I know is ridiculous to say. So anyways, you take Zach Hyman's skill set out of this lineup, which is a unique skill set. What do you do moving forward to get over that proverbial hump in the playoffs when a guy who is a quote-unquote warrior for you is no longer wearing the jersey of the Toronto Maple Leafs?
I don't know if I buy the narrative of the Leafs not being gritty enough. I don't know if that's...
But you hear it all the time, right?
You hear it all the time. I don't know if it's true. Just because you hear it all the time doesn't make it true. I mean, Pittsburgh's best player is gritty, obviously. I think the larger issue is, and it's purely philosophical. And I apologize to the Grappler, the producer of this show, even now, for the storm I rained upon him the day after Tavares signed. And I asked the question, and I always preface this with, I think the world of John Tavares as a player and as a person, but I asked the question that day, like, how do you make this fit for the cap? My issue is less their grit. My question is, can you win with four forwards making half your cap? And it hasn't happened before. It doesn't mean it can't happen, but it's never happened before. So that's my question is there too much committed to one part of their game? I don't know if it's not enough grit. It's
diversity in a way of your team.
Well, I just don't know if you can have, I think we talked about this last week. For $41 million, the Leafs get Matthews, Marner, Tavares, and Nylander.
Yeah.
For a shade over that, Tampa gets Stamkos, Kucherov, Point, Hedman, and Vasilevsky. So they get a Norris Trophy caliber defenseman and a Vezina Trophy caliber goaltender. So,
They're getting more bang for their buck. I think we all.
So if you have $50 to spend on dinner, and you spend $40 on steaks,
yeah, you better really like that steak.
You better really love your steak.
And you better be on a strictly protein diet.
Yeah. So I guess that's the question, and I'll ask Kyle that. Because it's been an ongoing discussion. But when I said that at the time, now in retrospect, maybe Christmas isn't the time to ask how you're going to pay for all this. My timing could have been better. I recognize that. And Leaf fans bombarded poor Grappler's Overdrive website or Twitter handle with abuse and vitriol and all those things.
It's part of the job, I guess, right?
But it is. I mean, it is the question that I've asked since then, and I don't know if we have an answer yet.
Well, and everyone's going to go to the comment that Kyle Dubas made today, which is, for better or worse, I believe in this group, and I believe that they are going to get it done, and I believe that they're going to win. And the last part of the quote is, and he has said this, I feel like for the last couple summers, I'm willing to bet everything on them. Now
he has.
He has, and I'll give the Grappler credit. He brought up the comment before the show. Is it because he truly believes in it, or he doesn't have a choice?
I think it's both. But I mean, he does believe this. I mean, I think we've seen the emergence of Kyle Dubas's management philosophy. I think we have a pretty good idea of what he likes.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't put a lot of emphasis on quote unquote toughness. I mean, fighting. The Leafs don't. You know, since Lou left, Lemerle left, the Leafs don't have a
Matt Martin.
Somebody's going to fight 25 times a year. He doesn't have. He believes in skill. He believes, certainly if you look at their draft record and some of their trades, I think he views undersized players as what you would call a market inefficiency. Mm-hmm. I think he views them as being undervalued. And so you get, you know, Sandin, Liljegren, a lot of the draft picks are smaller guys. So I think he views that he views smaller players as being undervalued. Now, that's an interesting, because there's a different theory that operates in hockey now, right? Like, look at the size of the defense corps for Montreal and for Tampa. Look at the size of St. Louis's defense corps. Look at the size of Washington.
Sure, it's a big difference.
Now, Pittsburgh wasn't.
That's the one team
Letang,
that you always hear.
Letang's not overly big, but the guys behind him were pretty sizable. Mm-hmm. So there is a philosophical debate about it, and no one's right or wrong, but it does seem like the pendulum is swinging back a little bit towards size.
Yeah. Well, and Kyle was asked about that, about learning from the teams that beat you or learning mm-hmm. from the teams that win Stanley Cups. And it's not that Kyle brushed it off, but he's also not going to change his philosophy just because Montreal was able to beat them in a series and go on a run and go to the Stanley Cup final. It'd be really hard at this stage of where the Maple Leafs are to suddenly try to mirror who the Montreal Canadiens are. You know, and I don't know if you're a little closer to kind of how Tampa is constructed, but as you pointed out, you know, they're constructed with all this talent, similarly to the Maple Leafs, but they're getting more bang for their buck with a lot of those guys.
And they also, if you look at Tampa, the difference between Tampa and Toronto is look at the draft between 2013 and 2017.
Yeah.
So Tampa gets Braden Point, Anthony Cirelli. They get, Andre Palat, I think, is in there. You know, Yanni Gord was an undrafted player. So they've been able to, their pipeline is full of players that they've developed who are cheap. Mm-hmm. You know, some of them are on entry-level contracts, and you control them longer. When you have to dip into the free agent market, you have to overpay. And when you trade, you have to give up assets to do it. So the Leafs, to get Muzzin, have given up a first-round pick. To get Foligno, you know, they had to give up a first-round pick this year. So they've had to sacrifice some picks in the draft. And of course, they've only got three so far coming up for this draft. I think three next year as well. So it's difficult because it's the same thing happening in Edmonton. The Oilers basically went 0-for after the first round. When you talk about the draft, you've got to say the first round and then what you do after the first round.
Right. It's Friday versus Saturday of the draft.
Yeah, so Saturday, Tampa's done really well. Mm-hmm. Edmonton and Toronto haven't done so well. They're okay. Toronto's had a couple guys in there. Edmonton has not had a lot. Mm-hmm. And so that's, I mean, you know, if you look at the great teams of the last decade or so, you'll see lots of up to a dozen guys that they drafted after the first round. Mm-hmm. And that's the trick.
Right. And as we are sitting here a day after the expansion draft, you know, the Oilers are hit by losing Adam Larson. You know, the Calgary Flames, as expected, lose Mark Giordano, and who knows how long Mark Giordano stays with Seattle. That could be a guy that they move.
I think if you wore the sweater, they're gonna keep.
Well, they're definitely gonna keep you now.
Yeah.
But
yeah, deadline.
Deadline, and the Leafs lose Jared McCann, and essentially Kyle Dubas loses him for a prospect and a seventh round pick, or that's what he loses to Seattle because that's what it costs to get Jared McCann from Pittsburgh.
Or you spent that to keep Kerfoot, to keep your lineup intact,
right.
and to keep Hall. I mean, you had a bunch of decisions to make. So I mean, we'll ask him about that too.
Yeah.
We can add that to the list. What I find interesting about yesterday, I didn't watch the show last night. I was out for dinner, but I found the criticism of Seattle's selections interesting. Because if you go back to 2017,
worst team in
it wasn't like people said, oh yeah, Vegas is gonna be a powerhouse. The headlines for them were James Neal.
Yeah.
Marc-Andre Fleury. Now Fleury was coming off a terrible year. I think he had a .909 save percentage the year before.
Mm-hmm.
Like the funny thing about Vegas is so you thought what? You thought William Karlsson, you predicted William Karlsson was gonna go like 6 goals to 43.
Yeah,
you thought Riley Smith was going to be 37 to 60 points. You thought Fleury was going to bounce back at 927. You thought Eric Halla was going to go from 15 to 29 goals. Like, so many things went right for Vegas that first year and since. But the one thing they were able to do was get so many picks and prospects to lay off other guys, and GMs learned from it.
Right. And then they've used that to keep getting better.
So Seattle didn't make one expansion draft consideration deal. Not one deal where they got something to lay off a player that we know of.
Yeah.
And they've made one deal so far. They've announced one trade so far. I understand there's more in the works, but they've announced one trade so far. Tyler Pitlick's going to Calgary. We still haven't heard from Tampa. The Lightning still have some moves to make, so we haven't heard on that. We'll find out maybe close to the draft, but I just find this sort of jumping all over Seattle. I mean, who thought Vegas was going to be?
Nobody.
I don't remember anyone.
No, everyone was kind of joking about how bad the team looked, you know, and it was like, oh, you're pumping up Derek Engeling because he's, you know, the hometown guy. Okay, great. You know,
and you know, the other thing about Vegas that people forget is the way the franchise came in was unprecedented, not just the rules and everything else. There was that horrendous shooting in Vegas.
Yeah.
Days before the franchise took to the ice, which threw the team into turmoil, but also galvanized the community, galvanized that team. They needed something to rally around. And the Golden Knights are beloved in that community because they're the first pro team there. Yeah. But the way they handled the horrendous tragedy afterwards was really classy and heartfelt. And Derek Englund's speech forever for that franchise will be remembered as one of the greatest moments in franchise history.
What everyone kept saying, oh, you're going to Vegas, like there's no community there. There's no tie. Like everyone's a tourist. And if you work, you know, in Vegas, you work in the strip and then you get the heck out of there. And it was anything but that, right?
It's so untrue. Vegas is a city of over a million people.
Yeah.
And only a small percentage of them ever go to the strip. I mean, maybe for a concert or something, but there's lawyers and doctors and businesses and accountants and all the other things that every other city has. And it's also, if the guys that live there love it.
Yeah, I've heard that. Players and management and broadcasters.
It's like a less expensive Scottsdale.
Yeah. Yeah, good point. Darren Dreger is going to join us in the 6 o'clock hour. So what we know now and what we know then is probably going to be
able to change.
We'll change. Again, Kyle Dubas is going to join us at 5:05. So the Leafs GM on the Zach Hyman situation, the expansion draft. Andy Petrillo, getting ready for the Olympics, is going to join us. But coming up next, we're going to go to Edmonton, where it looks like Zach Hyman will play moving forward. Ryan Rashog joining us here on Overdrive on TSN 1050 and on TSN 4. Overdrive continuing on TSN 1050, the TSN app, but also up on TSN 4 in the 5 o'clock hour, more specifically at 5:05. Leafs GM Kyle Dubas will join us. But on the line right now, we go to Edmonton. It's Ryan Rashog. Ryan, anything happening in that city today? What's happened?
Yeah, not much the last couple of days for Oiler fans to be stressed out about or talking about or lamenting over. It's always interesting here from a fan standpoint, guys. As a reporter, you just sit back and take it in and see what we can figure out. What's going to happen next?
Ryan, we heard reports yesterday that Zach Hyman met with Oiler management to talk about a potential contract. How much appetite do you think the Oilers have for Zach Hyman?
I think there's a tremendous appetite, Gord. I think, you know, they look at the two positions they have next to their two superstars. Or if they play together, then let's say a couple of other skill positions on their top couple of lines. And I just think they feel they need to put higher quality players into those positions and on the ice more often than they've been able to do in the past. And so in Hyman, there's a style of play that he comes with that I think they feel they're lacking and they like. And that's that kind of gritty, round the net, do whatever it takes type style of play that I just think they really feel they need to have on the ice more often with those guys. And I think that they've decided that Hyman is a good fit. I'm intrigued by a right shot on the left side. I think they are too. I think that they just believe this is the style of play they need. So I think there's a tremendous amount of interest here. And I think they feel if they throw enough years at this thing, they can get the cap space down enough to have it make sense for them. And that's what Ken Holland is in the market to do right now, guys, with these bigger acquisitions or whether it's re-signing Nugent Hopkins. We just saw him try and do it with Larson by adding a fifth year. He's piling up the years, right? He's kicking the risk can down the road, and he's trading term for cap space. And I think that's what they're hoping to do here with Hyman.
And as Gord pointed out, you know, it's just the Maple Leafs that could offer an eighth year to Zach Hyman. Now, there is a scenario where if the Leafs signed Zach Hyman to an eight-year deal and then traded him to the Oilers, you know, everybody's happy. But, of course, the Oilers would have to give up something. Do you know what that kind of price point would be for the Oilers and what they'd be willing to give up if that meant getting Zach Hyman?
Yeah, well, there's sort of two perspectives to look at this, right? When you look at what draft or what potential free agents have been traded for in the past, it's usually kind of that mid-round pick, right? To give, whether it's negotiating rights or, you know, whatever you want to call it. I don't know that Kyle Dubas and company would view it that way. I mean, if you're signing a guy to an eight-year deal, and that deal is saving you by getting that eighth year, you know, let's say it's saving you, I don't know, couple hundred thousand, 300,000 a year, you look at what the total dollar value that you're saving that franchise by signing them and trading them, that's a lot of money over an eight-year term. So I think the Leafs' view on what the cost would be versus the Oilers' view on what they'd be willing to pay, I'm not sure there'll be a marriage there. And I think I could see Ken Holland being in a position here to have to just do the seven-year deal and be a little bit more patient with this. Because the one thing I know with Holland is he's given up a lot of picks in the last couple of years, and they're reticent to give away high picks right now. And so I could see them just biting the bullet on a bit more cap space for Hyman and only being able to give him the 7 years.
So, Ryan, the Oilers face-planted in the playoffs last year in the first round against the Jets. And I wonder about the urgency in Edmonton and whether this has to be a win-now team, because let's be honest, I mean, they've got two of the very best players in the NHL, the last two MVPs who have both won the scoring title, and they have almost nothing to show for it. I'm not going to ask you to read Connor McDavid's mind, but I will ask you this. How important is it for the Oilers to make some noise and make some progress with these two guys playing out their NHL primes?
Yeah, massively important, Gord. And I think Ken Holland was fairly upfront with that today. You know, he talked about the number of times he's been asked about the pressure to win with these two players. And, you know, there's two thoughts to this. So the 4 years and 5 years left on their deal, respectively, is that the timeline to get something done? I think the organization is operating under that idea that in the next, you know, before these contracts are up, they've got to get some playoff runs done. They need to push through to a Final Four, a Stanley Cup final. Obviously, they'd love to win one. I think there's a lot of pressure for them to win and show these guys and put teams on the ice that are an indication to these guys that they're serious about winning now, because when you have a player of Connor McDavid's caliber and the legacy that he wants to leave, you know, this game with, and you throw Leon Draisaitl in that same conversation too, these guys, you know, these guys, that matters to them. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, there's definitely pressure to win while these guys are in them. And the other school of thought is, well, if they don't win in the next couple years, could there be the potential that they would want out and not complete their contracts here? And I think there's probably a healthy fear that it goes down that. It's been talked about for years. I think we're only now getting into the range where if in the next few years something, some real progress isn't made, that maybe that's a realistic possibility, that they might not see the end of those deals. I don't think we've been there to this point yet, but I think that's probably a healthy fear. And so there's a real sense of urgency to get something done in the next few years here for this team to continue to add good players, make progress, start to have some success, so that these two guys can feel good about what's happening around them as their careers get into that middle stage.
Well, Ryan, we're talking with Ryan Rashog, our TSN reporter in Edmonton. Ryan, there is, sadly, in Edmonton, a long history of great players leaving. And very few great Oilers have finished their career there. And, you know, not Adam Larson was a great Oiler, but we just saw another guy leave for free agency. How much does that play into the equation? The sort of, you know, within the fan group, first of all, there's the losing. There's the years of losing. And then of losing great players.
Well, I mean, from whose perspective, right? So from the fan base's perspective, it's like bruise after bruise after bruise after bruise. All the losing this franchise has done over the last, you know, 15-plus years. I mean, there have been, they had a great run there to a cup final and almost got over the hump, but boy, there has not been much for fans to celebrate since then. And then it is, like you say, Gord, there's, you know, players leaving from, you know, probably the best example with Chris Pronger. You know, they land a truly elite player, a truly elite defenseman, and that doesn't last because he wants out. You know, now Adam Larson makes a decision to go somewhere else because of a change of scenery, and there may have been some other personal reasons at play and such for Larson, but still, it's a player choosing to move on from Edmonton after it seeming like a pretty ideal scenario and the Oilers willing to put fair money on the table. So, yeah, it's an issue, and it's something that this market, I mean, you look how aggressive they're potentially being with Zach Hyman here. Mm-hmm. You know, have him in town. Yeah, they get permission from the Leafs, obviously, to talk to him, but it's going to be the full court press. When they get the sense there's potential to grab the player they want and that player might want to be here, we see them go all in. Look how fast the Duncan Keith trade happened. Did it need to happen that fast? Well, they decided, hey, here's a guy that wants to be here, that's won Stanley Cups, won Olympic gold medals, won lots. They felt they needed that ingredient, and they couldn't get that ingredient elsewhere. He wanted to be here. Look how fast they moved. So it matters when guys want to be here. You see how fast they pounce on that because they've seen the other side of that many, many times.
And a big ingredient to any team, obviously, is goaltending. And one of the good stories about the Oilers last year, especially in the regular season, was the play of Mike Smith, which surprised a lot of people. You know, the 39-year-old going 21-6-2, goals against of .231, save percentage of .923.
Best in the North Division.
Yeah. Best,
yeah. Like, and signed just a two-year deal in you know, the $2 million range. But again, 39. How do you see that position playing out over the next year or two?
Yeah, well, we got to figure out what's happening with Mikko Koskinen here, right? That contract has been an albatross for this organization basically since the day they signed it. Was not a good deal. Hasn't been at any point, you know, since the time they've signed it. So going into the last year makes way too much money. They're going to see if they can get out from underneath it. There's talk of a buyout. Ken Holland has said all along they're going to probably be one buyout. I believe that buyout's going to be James Neal. So what does that mean for Mikko Koskinen? Either the Oilers return the same goaltending tandem next season, a Koskinen and Smith, or they find a trade for Koskinen in which they're eating a bunch of salary and just to try and move him along so they can try and get a fresh face in there. I think that's going to be a lot easier said than done. I'm not sure how they move this player or what the solution is here. So as for Mike Smith, I mean, sometimes you got to place bets. Mm-hmm. And you know, the Oiler Nation went crazy last year when they signed Mike Smith because they thought, well, he's too old and, you know, you need an upgrade and it worked out unbelievably. Can you imagine if Ken Holland would have signed Mike Smith to a two-year deal last year? How crazy people would have gone? Yet look how good that would have looked had they had another year with him. So sometimes you got to place bets, and they're betting Mike Smith will have you know, reasonable level of play in him this year. Be able to maybe mentor a new goaltender next year, but their ability to keep pucks out of the net is standing in their way of taking the next step. They've got the stated intention of defending better, and they just lost one of their best defenders, and the situation in net, it's fair to say, is it going to be good enough? Maybe not.
So, Ryan, let me ask you this. Let's say they get Zach Hyman. Let's say they sign Zach Hyman. It clearly makes them better. Does it make them good enough to be a contender? Signing free agents isn't normally the way to build a team. It is rarely. I mean, Chara signing with Boston is an outlier, but I mean, Boston was a good team before that. But for teams that don't make the playoffs or that are out in the first round, signing free agents hasn't normally been the path to greatness. Does this make the Oilers good enough?
Well, there's still lots of holes, and they're important holes, Gord. And honestly, they may fill those holes through free agency as well, which is more to your point. Like, Ken Holland is looking to structure a significant part of his lineup here, potentially through free agency, and as you just spelled out, that doesn't always work. So does it make them good enough? Well, let's say they get the same level of goaltending this upcoming season that they got last year. Let's just say that happens. So that would be a huge break for them if it went that way. We'll see what they get done on their blue line, but right now, you know, with Larson leaving and some uncertainty as how they're going to defend, big question marks there about their ability to, and their penalty kill. The other thing that's not talked about enough, their penalty kill takes a huge hit with Adam Larson leaving. And they're running out of penalty killers on the blue line here. So that's a bit of an issue for them. They're better up front, but they have no third-line center. I mean, how important is that third-line center position when you get into, you know, the second or third round of the playoffs and defensive zone faceoffs and all of that? They don't have that player, and I don't believe they have that player coming. I don't think Ryan McLeod is ready to step into that role at this point in time. So absolutely critical holes, Gord, like a third-line left winger, a third-line center, a second-pairing right shot D. What's going to happen in net? Hyman helps, but there are still some significant issues on this roster, and free agency seems the main pathway to fixing a lot of that, unless they start pulling some trades and firing futures out the door. And we all know how Ken Holland feels about that.
Well, as you pointed out, a great time to be making a living as a reporter in that city.
It's never dull.
Never dull in Edmonton.
Just tweet at your own peril in this city. That's all I'll say.
Yeah.
Just turn your mentions off, my friend.
Yeah.
Turn your mentions off.
Yeah.
Gord, you're going to have to show me how to do that. You'll have to walk me through that, bud. I don't see that button on my Twitter app. You'll definitely have to show me how.
Yeah, he could put a course on when it comes to that. Ryan, really appreciate you joining us on a busy day. All the best.
Yeah, same to you guys. Great to chat with you both.
There's Ryan Rashog from Edmonton on the Oilers, who, you know, kind of similar to this city. The urgency is there, and
well,
so are the holes.
Because the situation is, I mean, I worked there, I can tell you. In the back of your mind, there's always this thing, do these guys really want to be here?
Right.
Now, Ken Holland was the GM in Detroit, which isn't exactly the garden spot of North America. But when you're winning, it's fine. Mm-hmm. And they were actually able, while they were winning, to lure lots of players to come there. They signed Marion. Like, they got lots of guys to go there. But when you're not winning,
it's not a fun place.
In places like that, I'm not criticized, but it's not as good as, you know, Florida and, I mean,
well,
California. It's not as good.
You got to sell free agents on the team, on the organization.
Like, why did Adam Larson leave Edmonton? Well, I'm sure one of the reasons was he's sick of hearing about the Taylor Hall deal. It had nothing to do with him.
Yeah.
He didn't ask to be traded for Taylor Hall.
Change of scenery.
He got a change of scenery. He got sick of hearing about it. So, but I think in the back of your mind in Edmonton, there's always going to be this thing. If they face plant again this year, is McDavid going to say that's enough?
Yeah.
Now, he's never given any indication that he would do that. He's never said, you know, all he's ever talked about is wanting to win. He's never said, I don't want to be here. He's never given any indication he doesn't. But because of Gretzky, now Gretzky was traded, but, you know, Messier and Coffey and Curry, and, I mean, you go through the list, it can't help from a fan's perspective but to weigh on.
When you said that, it made me think about how many guys, or lack thereof, have finished things up in Edmonton or gone their whole career in Edmonton. No shortage of great players who played in the city.
And you can say the same thing here. How many great Leafs have finished their career here?
Yeah, not even Sundin stayed, right?
Right. So I mean, you got to go back to George Armstrong. I mean, there's been a few, but I mean, there aren't many.
Yeah.
But there, it was guys who left in their prime. It was guys who were near the top of the league, who were part of one of the greatest, I mean, really, that team in the late 80s, one of the greatest teams in history, dissolved before fans' very eyes.
Yeah.
And so,
yeah, could have won more cups.
And so in their mind, I can tell you this, when you live there, you're asking that question. Whether it's right or wrong, in the fans' minds, there's always that question.
Yeah. You brought up the Red Wings. How about acquiring Alex Nedeljkovic today?
Yeah. Who was kind of, I mean,
a Calder finalist.
Yeah. And kind of the reason Carolina had the year they had.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, interesting team in Carolina, right? I mean, I know
it's budgets and stuff. Steve Yzerman was asked why the Canes would make this deal. I don't know if you saw this quote. You're going to have to ask them why they are comfortable doing that.
Well, because, I mean, Steve's not...
I know that, but...
Yzerman's never going to answer a question for another team. I mean...
No, I get that.
He barely answers questions about his own team. So.
He does not give you much, if anything. But he kind of gave us something there, and maybe I'm just reading into it too much, but... It's kind of it's almost a pleasant surprise for Detroit, and he has talked about this guy can be our starter for.
So he's trying to put the pieces of the puzzle in place, right? They've got the defenseman Moritz Seider looks like a star.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he was terrific. He was the Swedish League defenseman of the year last year. I think he was the rookie of the year. No, he's the defenseman of the year. I think he played great at the World Championship. He looks like a terrific young defenseman. Now you think you've got the goalie. You've got some forwards that you like. You know, Lucas Raymond looks like a really good young forward. They've got, so he's trying to put the pieces together. You got to be patient. And don't forget, a lot of what happened in Detroit was all about the playoff streak, right? It was all about keeping the playoff streak going. And they were moving into a new building, and there was pressure from ownership to keep the streak going, to sell the tickets in the new building. And there's a price to be paid for that. There is a price to be paid for that. And so now,
we asked about Ryan
in Edmonton, is it the same thing? Are they going to pay a price down the road to try to win now, to try to make this team at least more competitive for McDavid and Draisaitl?
Kyle Dubas is going to join us at 5:05 with more of the story when it comes to the Toronto Maple Leafs. Coming up next, though, we'll discuss the NFL and how if you aren't vaccinated and there's an outbreak, it could cost your team a playoff spot.
If you're unvaccinated.
Yes. Sorry. If you're unvaccinated.
If you're unvaccinated,
it could cost your team a playoff spot. That's coming up on Overdrive, TSN 1050 and on TSN 4. Overdrive continuing on TSN 1050 and on TSN 4. Mark Rowan for Brian Hayes with a head bobbing Gord Miller. You're enjoying the tracks today.
I'm enjoying the tracks. Way to go, Mulls.
I feel like we might have...
Van Halen, more of a Mulls thing than I think... Yeah, it's more of a Mulls thing. Let's be honest, it's his music.
It's his show.
It's his show.
We're just guests.
He does, literally
a guest here.
Mulls actually
Brian
does
Hayes.
Run... Has your voice ever been heard on the radio? Have you ever spoken on the radio?
Oh, yes, it has.
Not lately, though.
I talked to Brian the other day.
What'd you tell him?
I don't remember. Something about wrestling, I think.
Better you than me.
Okay. Well, Mullis is part of the show. Yeah, Al's brother. We'll get you on at some point, buddy. I'm looking at you.
Yeah.
You better bring your A game.
He's in his cage.
Yeah.
So how about the NFL?
Yeah.
This is remarkable news.
Yeah. And I wonder, does this relate to other leagues as well?
Right.
So the NFL informed teams that if a game cannot be rescheduled during the 18-week season due to a COVID outbreak, that players will lose their paycheck, and the team where the outbreak happened will forfeit and be credited with a loss for playoff seeding.
Now, this is if the outbreak can be traced to unvaccinated players.
Yes.
So if unvaccinated players lead to the outbreak, neither team will get paid. That's if they can't reschedule the game in a timely way. So DeAndre Hopkins of Arizona promptly said, I'm rethinking my future in the NFL, and then promptly deleted that tweet. I got to say, I am 100% in favor of this, which will surprise no one.
That does not surprise me. We discussed this last week with Aaron Nola, the Phillies pitcher, who said, I'm not taking the vaccine. I don't care. And it's certain teams are above the 75, 80% threshold, and some teams are really lagging. And, the Cowboys have been under a spotlight. And just going through Twitter, not even searching it 5 minutes ago, it's we can now confirm Ezekiel Elliott has been vaccinated. I don't see other leagues doing that because I don't think other leagues, I don't know, it wasn't an issue, it didn't seem, in the NHL to get players vaccinated.
The amazing thing is it's insanely stupid not to get vaccinated. Like, you are literally flying in the face of scientific and medical evidence. It is literally idiotic. There was an article today about an emergency room doctor in Alabama who has people pleading as they're being intubated, okay, give me the vaccine now. And she has to say to them, I'm sorry, it's too late. I really believe, Mark, one of the reasons that Canada has a better vaccination rate than the United States, first of all, we trust our government more in a lot of cases. But secondly, we don't have Fox News much up here. Most people, I don't get Fox News on my cable. It's on some tier I don't get.
Yeah.
I don't agree. When Joe Biden said Facebook is killing people, and he walked it back, but people on Facebook are killing people.
Yeah.
100%. I mean, it's incredible to me that any rational person could look at the evidence, ignore Facebook and all the stupid conspiracy stuff out there, and think it wasn't a good idea.
But also, it's if you're unaware of what the vaccine is or what we're trying to do, that's okay because we're not all equipped.
We're all literally vaccinated.
I know that
we're all vaccinated.
But just for whatever reason, I don't know what this vaccine is. What is it doing to my body? I'm not going to Gord Miller because it's not Gord Miller MD.
100%.
I'll go to my doctor, and the doctor can explain to me. Yeah, A, you've been getting vaccines your whole life, and B, you know, these are the risks, which are very small, and these are the benefits, and they're very big.
Yeah, you should not go to me for medical advice. So that's why I went to doctors and scientists and asked them for medical advice, because they know.
Yeah. We know that Kyle Dubas is going to join us in a couple of minutes.
This will be fun.
GM at 5:05, plus Darren Dreger at 6:05 as Overdrive continues on TSN 1050 and on TSN 4.